it's good to be here this morning. Thank you for the invitation. When Ben asked if we had any plans to visit the area soon, at the time we didn't, but Joy said we should make some plans, so that's how we ended up here. So thanks for the invitation. Glad to be able to worship with you today. Did I do something? There we go. That is perfect. Okay, we'll start with a little game. I'm going to pick your favorite number between 1 and 10. So give it some thought. And then the way we'll play is just with a show of hands. So who picked 1? Who picked 2? Who picked 3? So 3's in the lead with 2 people. Who picked 4? That's 4 is in the lead. Who picked 5? Oh, that's pretty good for 5. 6? Lots of 6's. 7's? There we go. So if you pick 7, keep your hand up and look around and see how many hands are up for 7. 8? Some 8's. 9's. Got a 9, a 9, and 10. No 10s. So that's good. That was a better spread than we had when we played that game at Prince Road. But it was the same result. 7 was the winner. And that is what I expected. If it didn't go that way, that might have been a little bit of trouble. But 7 worldwide is everyone's favorite number. This is a headline from the Daily Mail, which is a newspaper in the UK. And the world's favorite number is 7. The article goes into it a little bit as to why that might be. They think it might be because of religious connotations, but in any case, that is the world's favorite number, is 7. And 7 is a very fun number to look at. If you look at some of the things in the world that have to do with 7, we've been singing this morning. You probably know there are 7 notes in our scale. The scale that we use is man-made, and across the world, everyone uses a 7-note scale to produce music. There are 7 colors in the rainbow, probably familiar with that. And then this is my favorite. If you draw a circle around any portion of a beehive, you end up with 7 of the little hexagons, and you can do this at home, too, with anything that's cylindrical. You can use soda cans or anything that's cylindrical, and you group them together and try to make a stable structure. And what you'll see is as you group those together, the only way that you can make a stable structure is to group 7 of them together. If you try 6 or if you try 8, when you apply pressure to the soda cans, they'll start to move around. But it's 7 that gives you that perfect structure. Those are all fun to think about. I don't really want to talk about any of those this morning. What I want to talk about is something that we see in the Bible that's closely linked to the number 7, and something that we see all the time as we live our lives that's closely linked to the number 7. And that is, you can fill in the blank, the disciples gathered together to break bread on the first day of the week. And so that's what I want to talk about this morning. And I hope we can get some edification out of looking at God's plan for the week and how he has designed it and how he expects us to organize our lives around the week and how that can be better for us in terms of our spiritual lives and our physical lives. So that's what we'll be talking about. The week is God's unique measurement of time, and I'll talk a little bit about what that means. And this is kind of broken up into two parts. So the first thing we'll look at is just the uniqueness of the week. And we'll look at what makes the week different from other ways that we track time and how we can see God's signature on the world throughout the week. when you look at the creation, you can see God kind of signing his work, just like an artist signs a piece of art. God has signed his creation so that we know that he's the one that created it. And the week, I think, is one of the ways that he's done that. So we'll talk about that. And then for the second portion of the talk, I'll talk about how the week really is the best way for us to organize our lives. It's not an arbitrary unit of time. It's something that God has designed and has given to us that we may order our lives around it. And that's good for our spiritual health and for our physical health. I want to talk first about what I mean when I say that the week is one of God's signatures. And this will take a little bit, but this will be a good thought exercise for us to understand the ways that we keep track of time. And so to do this thought exercise, kind of use your imagination here. And what I want you to imagine is that you are waking up on a desert island and you have no memory and you have no understanding of the world around you. So you're starting your life from scratch on this deserted island and it's just you. You don't know your name. You don't remember names for anything. Your mind is completely blank. So that's the thought exercise. So the first thing you'd notice with respect to time, you'd notice very quickly that the sun is going up and down every day. And so you would establish a concept of time based on the rising of the sun. Now you might decide that this unit of time starts when the sun rises. That would be reasonable. You might decide that this unit of time starts when the sun goes down. That might be reasonable, and that's what the Jews did. Or you might decide that this unit of time starts in the middle of the night when you're sleeping, and that's the way we do it in this country. But let's say you decide that this unit of time starts when the sun rises. And so you've now have this concept of time in your mind that is based on when the sun comes up every morning. The second thing you might notice is that the moon is also going through a cycle. And it goes through this cycle about every 28 to 30 times that the sun comes up. So if you're really paying attention, you might see that this is happening, like I said, roughly every 28 to 30 sunrises. And so now you've got two concepts of time. You're noticing that the sun comes up with a certain amount of frequency, and you notice that the moon is changing its pattern and its behavior in a cycle that takes about 30 sunrises. The third thing, if you're paying attention, you might notice that there's an even longer cycle that's going on in nature, and that matches about every 365 times that the sun comes up. If your island is in a climate like ours, then you'd notice there's four distinct seasons. But even if your island is someplace in the tropics or someplace like India, you'd still notice that there's two seasons, a rainy season and a dry season. And so you'd notice this pattern. And if you're paying attention, you might notice that this pattern is related to the position of the sun as it rises and sets. And so you'd call this period a sun cycle. So now, without any outside resources, just with your own mind and observing creation, you would have come up with the three major ways that we use track of time in our society. These ways of keeping time, the day, the month, and the year, are baked into creation. Any person or any culture that is interested in tracking time would arrive with the same units of measurement, the day, the month, and the year. Some things that we measure, we've just made up, like the foot, the yard, the meter. Those don't really mean anything as it relates to nature. But if you were tracking time, any culture that tracks time comes up with the day, the month, and the year. But the week is kind of like a foot or a yard. It doesn't have any natural analog in nature. But yet, almost every culture that has been on the earth has come up with this unit of time that matches 7 days. This is a Buddhist calendar. You'll notice that it's arranged in weeks of 7 days. Oh, I'm sorry, this is Hindu. this is Buddhist. Also, just like the Hindu calendar, it's arranged in units of time of 7 days. This is a quote from Aristotle. Aristotle wasn't writing about the week. He was writing about a medical condition. But through writing about his medical condition, we can see that Aristotle understood the concept of a week. He says the fourth day is indicative of the seventh. He's talking about medical symptoms. He says the eighth is the commencement of the second week. So now we have the Buddhist culture, the Hindu culture, and Aristotle was Greek. So the Greek culture, they've all established this way of tracking time that matches 7 days. If so many different cultures come up with the same way of tracking days, and there's nothing in the natural world that matches a grouping of 7 days, then the concept must have come from somewhere else. And the Bible tells us that that concept came directly from God. One thing you'll find as you look into the week is there's a certain sense of bafflement as to why we use the week. If you look at purely secular sources, you'll read articles from people that just don't understand why we're using the week, and they don't get it, and they think that everyone has just happened to pick the same random number. Those that aren't aware of the Bible's teaching can't seem to get their head around this concept of the week. For us, who are familiar with the Bible, the week seems as natural as could be, and you've probably, maybe you've never even given it any thought why we track time in 7 days, because you're familiar with the Bible. God established the week very early. Genesis chapter 2, God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Here's a couple of quotes from an article that's trying to understand the week, and I do admire their efforts to understand something, but they're going at it the wrong way. So this writer says that throughout history into the 20th century, thinkers have tried to oust the seven-day week for philosophical, mathematical, and political reasons, and I'll show you some of those. And then he says, and yet the thing persists. You can understand his bafflement. He doesn't understand why we're still using the week. He even says, well, there's nothing in particular about a week that makes it special. And he guesses, he's guessing, he says, it seems the idea took off simply because there was a need for a unit of time and seven was a cool number. So he's guessing as to how the week came. And then he says, it's surprising that we haven't come up with anything better. And you can find a lot of these articles online about people that are trying to figure out the week and trying to understand it. And what they do is they'll point out, well, there's nothing natural about the week. And that's what people point out. And if you're saying that there's nothing in it in the creation that mimics the week, like the day and the month and the year, that's true. There's nothing in nature that matches the week. But if it's so bad and if it's so unnatural, I think you have to ask, well, wouldn't we have come up with something better by now? Maybe not, but the week is still here and the world is still using it. And it's worth looking at why that is. There have been some attempts to move away from the week. And if you like history, you may know some of these already. I think it must bother some people when they realize that they're using a unit of time that's based on God's plan. The day and the month and the year are also based on God's plan. God invented the day and the month and the year. But it's harder to ignore the week when it doesn't match up to a natural cycle like the other periods of time. So here's two of the more famous attempts to kill the seven-day week. In 1929, the Soviet Union moved to a five-day week. That was how they were going to get rid of the week. And what they did, instead of giving everyone the same days off like we do, so we normally, if you have what you would call a normal job, you're off on Saturday and Sunday. So what they did is they rotated days off. So here's their calendar. This is fun. How you read this calendar is everyone would be assigned a color. So I might be green and Clayton would be blue. So the way that would work is that when the calendar was a green day, I would be off work. And when the calendar was a blue day, Clayton would be off work. So there's no one day where everyone is off work, and we just go through this cycle, and it's a five-day cycle. How do you think that turned out? Yes, confusing, frustrating. So a few problems with this. One is that most people don't have the same day off. So how do you plan a trip to the zoo if everyone in your family has a different day off? And then this is the really good one, is they realize that the machines are breaking down because the machines aren't getting a break. No one is turning off the factory machines for the weekend. The factory machines are running every day, all day long, and there was no time to repair or to maintain them or to give them a break. So that turned out bad. And there's a hint here about what is nice about the seven-day week and what is nice about that day of rest. The other famous example, and this may be the more famous one, is revolutionary France. Similar to the Soviet Union, the French revolutionists were determined that they were not going to have a calendar that had anything to do with religion. Well, if you want to eliminate everything religious from your calendar, then the week has to go, because the week came directly from God. And so what they decided is that they would replace the 7-day week with a 10-day week. So this is a calendar from revolutionary France. And this experiment lasted longer than the Russian experiment, but still less than 10 years. And they went back to the 7-day week. And France uses the 7-day week just like everyone else. In France, the problems they had is that workers were upset because they're only getting one day off in 10 now instead of one day off in 7. So that wasn't great. And then the system didn't match what other countries were doing. So France would have different days off than all the other European neighbors that they had. And then, of course, it made worship inconvenient for French Christians. Despite the efforts of the French Revolution, there were still lots of Christians in France, and there still are lots of Christians in France, and it made worship inconvenient for them. Interestingly, when you look at the French Revolution, there are some changes from the French Revolution that are still with us, like the metric system. That has proven very popular. And in the scientific community worldwide, we still use the metric system. I think everyone likes it pretty well. But their attempt to get God out of their calendar was a complete failure. When we look at the real history of the week, as we saw from the passage in Genesis, God established the concept of the week from the very beginning. He used 6 days doing creating things, and then on the seventh day, God didn't do any creation work, so he established a precedent for us where we are to do 6 days of work and then one day of rest. Genesis 2 and 3 says that God made the seventh day holy, setting it apart. So setting it apart for rest. That's what God set the seventh day apart for. This is God communicating to Adam that the expectation is that he is going to work for 6 days, and then he is going to rest on the seventh. It wouldn't have done any good for God to set the day apart, but not tell Adam. The whole point of setting it apart was setting it apart for Adam and for Adam's rest. In the days of Noah, we can see Noah is measuring time in weeks. For 7 days I will cause it to rain. It came to pass after 7 days, he stayed yet another 7 days. So not far removed from Adam, we see that the week has caught on as a way to measure time. And where did Noah get it? Where did Noah understand that one way you can measure time is in units of 7 days? Well, he got that from God through Adam. If you think about what makes a week, you need to have at least one day that's different. Without a day of rest, then there's no way to tell when one week starts and when one week ends. Every other unit of time, we have something that marks, okay, this is the end of one unit and the beginning of a next unit. With the sun, with the day, it's the sun. When the sun goes up and when the sun goes down, we know we've moved from one day to another. With the week, it's the day of rest that makes it special. That's how we know we've moved from one week to another. Most extra-biblical sources point to the Babylonians as the inventors of the week. So if you read about the history of the week, what you'll read is two things, really. There's two things that most people agree on. One thing is that we don't really know. And then the second thing is that, well, maybe it was the Babylonians. That's the impression that you'll get. And I think maybe we do get a lot of the history of the week from the Babylonians, but it's worth asking, where did the Babylonians get it? After the flood, we know the world was repopulated from Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The Babylonians were either descendants of Shem, or they were a combination of the descendants of Shem and Ham. But the Babylonians got the week from Noah, and that's where we get the week from. After the children of Israel left Egypt, God reminded them of his intention for the week. He set them up for the collection of manna. The collection of manna was done on a schedule, and likely during the time in Egypt, the Hebrews were not getting their day of rest. So God makes sure that when they come out of Egypt, that he's going to get them back on track, and he's going to set things up again so that they're marking time like he wants them to, and that they're marking time and that they're measuring their time by the week. And so this is what he tells them. The Lord has commanded, tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So he's getting them back on track. And we know from this time in Exodus all the way up to when Jesus was born, the Jews were still following that cycle that God wanted them to. And we know that because the Pharisees gave Jesus such a hard time about the Sabbath because they had kind of lost their understanding of what God meant for them to do. And we still observe a special day now. We still have a holy day. We still have a day that's been set apart. And when you look at the movement of the Sabbath from what we would call Saturday to what we call Sunday, there's no clear commandment from Jesus. You'll never find a clear commandment from Jesus where he says, by the way, after I'm gone, stop observing the Sabbath on Saturday and start observing it on Sunday. But even without that clear commandment, we get a very clear picture from the scripture that that's the exact thing that Jesus sanctioned and that the apostles sanctioned and that the early church did. The first hint is that we know Jesus was resurrected on the first day of the week. In John 20 and 1, the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early and the stone had been taken away from the tomb. But that's just a hint. Without any other further information, just recognizing that Jesus was raised from the dead on the first day of the week wouldn't necessarily mean that we should move our day of rest from Saturday to Sunday. But that's not all we have. We have lots more. After Jesus' resurrection, he appeared to the disciples again on the first day of the week. On the evening of that day, the first day of the week, the doors being locked, Jesus came and stood among them. So we're starting to get some more hints that the first day of the week is special. The next big hint is that the Holy Spirit came upon the apostles on a Sunday. Acts 2 and 1 tells us that this happened on Pentecost. This is a section from the People's New Testament Commentary. And what this section is doing is it's just doing the math between Jesus' crucifixion and the Pentecost and showing that the Pentecost after Jesus' crucifixion would have indeed fallen on the first day of the week. So the hints are kind of adding up that the first day of the week is going to be special. And then we see that is indeed the way the early church treated the first day of the week. They gathered to break bread on the first day of the week, and they gathered to take up a collection on the first day of the week. Remember that Sabbath means day of rest. Sabbath doesn't mean Saturday. Sabbath means day of rest. So we can remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, even though we take our day of rest on a Sunday, as the apostles did and as the early church did, and not on Saturday, as the Jews did. The last thing I want to talk about is how good a day of rest is for us. But it's good for us if we do it like God intended. When God made the Sabbath and set it apart for Adam, God was doing that not for God's benefit, but he was doing it for Adam's benefit. And that's what Jesus was trying to communicate to the Pharisees. When the Pharisees couldn't quite understand the Sabbath, Jesus was trying to help them out. He explains that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is designed for us. It's for our good. It's designed to make us feel better. It's good for us. Just like the machines in the Soviet Union needed a day of rest, well, our bodies and our minds need a day of rest as well. This is a book by a man named Matthew Sleeth. It's called 24/6. And in this book, he examines how good the week is for us physically. And he points out that many people today just go all the time, which is not healthy. It's healthy to take a day off from work, to take a day off from balancing the checkbook, to take a day off from checking email, just to take a day off and relax and recharge. Take a day each week and spend it with your family. So that's what Matthew Sleeth's book is about. He talks about stop days, where you stop working. And really, all he's talking about is what God had already planned for his people when he came up with the Sabbath. It's important to think, though, that the Sabbath is not a lazy day. It's not a day to just loaf and not to to take an opportunity to not get things done. The way God has designed the week is that we work for 6 days, and then we take a day of rest. And what studies have shown is that when people organize their lives by this, they're actually more productive because they get more done in those 6 days than they would if they were trying to spread all of their work out over 7 days. And that's what this quote is from Matthew Sleeth. Here's a fun experiment. This is a gentleman that did an experiment on Lifehacker, and he went into the experiment with these goals. So he wrote this article, and he was going to start a 7-day work week. He was going to reorganize his life, and he was going to stop taking rest days so that he could be more productive and he could get more done. So here's his hypotheses. He says, one, he thinks he's going to be more successful in building habits because he's not going to take 2 days off from habit building. He says he's going to be in better sync with his team around the world, and he's going to have a better handle on emails by having time to work on the weekend as well. And he thinks, well, I can work less than 40 hours a week, and I'll be even more productive since I'm not going to take long breaks between working and not working. So this is a gentleman that has seemingly no knowledge of God's plan for the week. And so he's just taking this on himself that he's going to improve on God's plan for the week, and he's going to reorganize his life, and he's going to be better, and he's going to be more productive. Now, to his credit, he recognized that his experiment was a failure. One thing he says he found is that his workout routine wasn't working. If he's working out every day, he's not getting any breaks. His physical body's not getting any break. His muscles aren't getting any breaks. And he strained a muscle and had to take a whole week off. The other thing he found is that he was not able to get more work done. And he says here, I feel like the 7-day work week fell apart because of a lack of an extended period of renewal. My hypothesis that a couple of extra hours during the day and less overall daily hours working would be enough was invalidated in my experience. So here's a gentleman that learned the hard way that God's plan for the week is actually best. A couple good lessons we can get out of the week. One, we can see God in the week. When we organize our lives around a 7-day measurement, we know that that came from God. God invented the week, and he gave it to us as a way to organize our lives, and it's a unique unit of time that we don't see anywhere else in the world, and so it can be a good reminder of God and how good he is for us. And then we see also that the week is the best way to organize our days, and that's not only for our spiritual health, but that's for our physical health as well. From Noah to Moses to the early church, God's people have always consistently organized their spiritual lives by weeks. And scientists today agree that observing a weekly day of rest is best for our physical bodies and for our mental capacities too. I'll close just with a couple of quotes. Leonardo da Vinci says, every now and then go away, have a little relaxation, that when you come back to your work, your judgment will be sure. And Ovid says, take rest, a field that has rested gives a bountiful crop. So those are my thoughts on the week. I hope that has been encouraging and edifying for you, and that going forward you can see God's gracefulness and his blessings in the week that he has given us. It's truly one of the great blessings that he shared with us. At this time, we'll offer an invitation. If anyone wants to accept God into their lives, if anyone wants to get on board with the rest of the Christians around the world that are observing the Sabbath still, that are worshiping God like this group here does on the first day of the week, or if there's anything else that the group here can help you with, we'll offer those opportunities as we sing the invitation number.